Hi, everyone. Welcome to our Enterprise Mobility at Microsoft Subject Matter Expert Roundtable, or SME Roundtable. I'm Daniel Cumner, and I'll be your host today. We're the IT Showcase team, and we love to talk to our customers about how Microsoft does IT. Today, we have the IT experts that build, deploy, and manage mobility solutions here at Microsoft. This SME Roundtable is your opportunity to ask direct questions and receive candid answers. We have a Q&A session open in the Skype window, so if you'd like to start posting your questions there now, we can go through them as we progress with this broadcast. Before we get started, we'd like to learn a little bit more about you and the challenges you face in enterprise mobility. You should be able to see a question also in the Bing Pulse window, so feel free to answer your responses while we ask our SMEs to introduce themselves. So let's start with you, Jim.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Jim Adams. I'm a senior business program manager with Microsoft IT in the collaboration space, which includes Office 365.
My name is Fergus Stewart. I'm a program manager in Microsoft IT, and I run the My Microsoft IT program, which we use to accelerate and optimize the productivity of our end users.
My name is Eric Leonard. I'm a principal security manager in the information security and risk management team. My area of expertise is ensuring the security of our mobility and our cloud services, as well as in the area of identity and access management.
My name is Isaac Varin. I'm a senior program manager in Microsoft IT. My areas of focus are on device management and bring your own device, BYOD.
Hi, my name is Arun Maningal. I'm a senior software engineer. My engineering team is responsible for the strategy, design, and development of hyperscale services that power mobility scenarios that support our incident management workflow across Microsoft.
Cool. Thanks, everyone. So we're going to do our best to get through all of the questions in this hour. However, if we don't, we're going to stay behind here in the studio and after the live broadcast to continue to answer your questions. The video with the extended footage will be posted soon after at the Microsoft.com/IT Showcase site. So let's get started with some of our first questions. So I think we've got a question we're going to start out with Jim. How has Office 365 contributed to delivering mobility here at Microsoft?
That's a pretty good question. So Office 365 is really the foundation of the storage platform that all of mobility relies upon to store the information, enterprise or personal, that is conglomerated into the user experience here at Microsoft. So all of the devices that we use, whether they be mobile devices or workstations that are connected to the corporate network, are connected to this personal cloud, so to speak. And a part of that personal cloud is the platform called Office 365, or the services within Office 365. That gives the tool sets that we use here at Microsoft to be productive.
Very cool. So, how soon do we actually start to realize some of these benefits of moving to a cloud-based infrastructure?
Mm-hmm. So when we speak of mobility, we have to realize that cloud is what really gives the mobile experiences the power. It really is the backend that powers all of your mobile experiences. Many a times, people tend to believe that moving to cloud is really a financial decision. More often than not, it turns out that moving to the cloud really is an agility decision, because what that allows is allows your developers to bring in scenarios and light up scenarios for your mobility experiences within a short span from inception to development, because of the lack of barriers that would have existed in a traditional infrastructure that you would acquire. So if you were to put a ballpark in terms of what is the gains that you get, it's really the agility and ability to empower your customers with the key scenarios that they're looking for.
And it's not just developer agility.
Yeah,
it's user agility and
absolutely
productivity.
Absolutely.
So they're able to be productive anywhere on any device at
absolutely.
Any time, and that was something that was very difficult to deliver when Microsoft IT had to deliver all these services in a on-premises basis.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
Thanks. Let's talk a little bit about security, and maybe to you, Eric. Why is the strong multi-factor authentication so important in the cloud-first, mobile-first world?
Well, one of the reasons why is because passwords are really not secure in and of themselves. We know that passwords or a weak authenticator of that sort are something that can easily be stolen, something that careless people can share. You can have a weak password that can be easily guessed. And people have so many different passwords in their online environment that it's hard to remember all of them, and it's hard to manage them all. So what's really important for your enterprise is to create a strategy that incorporates strong authentication, where you're able to have multi-factor or different authenticators other than just passwords. And at Microsoft, because we're a cloud and mobile first environment, we have a couple different multi-factor authentication methods that suit the different ways that we interact in our environment. And we can get into that a little bit later, but basically, we don't rely only on passwords. Passwords are have their purpose in some places, but when you have, let's say, an administrator who needs to do something that's highly privileged, we have different methods to authenticate them versus someone who is just accessing their online mail through their mobile device.
Okay. Very cool, very cool. Isaac, maybe a question for you here. How does Microsoft manage their devices?
We manage our devices, the different devices in our environment, using two tools, System Center Configuration Manager and Microsoft Intune. And we do this in an integrated hybrid environment. We use Microsoft Intune to manage all of our mobile devices, and we use System Center Configuration Manager to manage our domain join devices.
Okay, very cool. Fergus, we're using a lot of HTML5 now in our modern apps as we're building. Mm-hmm. So, what have been the advantage of using modern HTML5 platform in the My Microsoft IT platform?
Oh, this is something that was completely new for us because the HTML5 platform became available in the Windows 8 timeframe. When I looked at it, I thought, oh yes. Here's an opportunity for us to build an end-user application using modern web technologies and also to leverage the pool of available developer skills in the web platform, which is a tremendous asset and a tremendous thing to be able to do, and to put that together with the power of the Windows desktop. So when we built the My Microsoft IT application using HTML5 technology, we were able to realize all the benefits of HTML5 web development tied together with the power of the Windows desktop, put those two together, it's been a tremendous combination. And we've been right at the leading edge of the Microsoft modern web platform. Now we're starting to see more and more of these modern applications appearing in Windows 10 as the platform matures more and more. We were one of the first, but I have to say we found it tremendous. And I'll pick up, actually, Arun's point about the flexibility with the cloud. We have moved all of our infrastructure for our client application over to the cloud. And the difference is amazing.
In the amazing past, up or amazing down?
Amazing up. Yeah. In the past, I spent so much time worrying about having two of each server, and did I have them behind the right load balancer, and what are the configuring the VIPs on the load balancer so that this server, if something happened to it, it would go over to that server. All of that is gone. It's all gone. It's almost like buying water from the water company. I open the faucet and water comes out. That is my experience with cloud infrastructure.
You
stop me if I'm going on too much, but I'm very enthusiastic about this. It's been a transformational experience for us. We are running a client application, but we're servicing it from the cloud dynamically, and it's been a completely different experience. Like I say, open the faucet with Windows Azure and water comes out.
So in the past, development of that application for on-premises would take typically how long?
For doing it with doing the setup is really the part that used to be a huge pain.
Right.
The development is accelerated because you're not having to worry about the setup. When you came to develop something, you would be thinking, right, first I've got to organize getting the servers and where are they going to be, which data center they're going to be in. What have I got to have in front of them? How many do I need?
Sure.
Configure this, configure that,
but
configure
the other.
All of that is gone. So that's probably cut, depending on what we are doing, it's probably cut about 75%
of
the time
how
that
much
it
time?
Takes to do, depends what we are doing. Across the board, anything cloud related, it's cut probably 75%
okay.
of the
to
time.
Add on to Fergus's point, right, a recent phenomenon which many might be familiar is the Pokemon Go app. When our customers want to have a viral app, and if they wanted to scale their backend, the cloud infrastructure is the only true way where they could really scale up based on the needs, scale out based on the needs on the viral adoption of applications, which would happen. In the traditional sense, you would have procured that hardware, which may or may not have been used throughout the year, or it may have just been used during that viral phase, which is, again, adding to what Jim's point was, hey, how do I select my SKUs where I deploy my services on? Mm-hmm. Now, it's just a knob on your portal, and you determine based on your scale needs how and when and where do you want them provisioned, depending on your user base as well. Mm-hmm. So that is a big promise.
Another example would be if you're in retail, mm-hmm. You can scale up during the holiday season when you mm-hmm. have the biggest load,
absolutely.
And come February or whatever, you can ratchet it back down,
absolutely.
And you only have to pay for the mm-hmm. amount of CPU yeah. or storage that you're yeah. using at the time.
Yeah.
But that's cloud,
yeah.
mm-hmm. and it's the basis for all the mobility scenarios that we have at Microsoft as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Sounds like the cloud does play a really big part.
It's a big,
that
big role, yeah.
That's why we keep on emphasizing on the cloud-first, mobile-first aspect. Mobility cannot really exist in an isolated environment.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not just the device that we're talking about continuously. It's about the services and the experiences that help you be productive, help you complete your day-to-day tasks and activities that you're really reaching out for.
Oh, yes. One thing that we found really different with this, to pick up your point about how long and how big, was right at the beginning of starting some program, the first set of questions were, well, how big do you want the server to be? How many servers do you want? What network bandwidth do you want into the server? And to be honest, the answer
which region
to
do
all
you
of
want
it,
the servers to be, I mean, co-located?
All
that's,
of those
that's the
questions,
user base.
And my answer was, well, I don't really know. Until the thing goes live, I don't really
absolutely.
Know. But the beauty of the platform, I should emphasize this, the platform as a service cloud implementation that we're using now is that I don't need to know. Like Arun says, I just turn up the dial and off we go.
Very
looks
cool.
Great.
Awesome. Let's talk about devices a little bit. We're at Microsoft. I know there's a Microsoft phone. Does Microsoft IT support devices other than the Windows devices on their network?
Absolutely we do. We have tens of thousands of non-Microsoft Windows devices from various fruit vendors, et cetera. But yes, we support tablets from that are non-Windows. We support phones that are non-Windows phones. And it's all made possible through the management layer, Intune, et cetera, that allows us to be able to support BYOD. So a user that wants to walk down to their local technology store and pick out the device that just tickles their fancy, more than likely can bring it right on to campus and be productive on day one by simply registering with Intune and getting started that way. So they can get their Android tablet or their iPhone up and running in quick order.
Cool.
Yes.
Isaac, anything to add to that?
Yes, I'd like to add that Microsoft IT is continuously working to stand up more and more services for the diverse devices that we have in our environment. Many of the devices that we have, such as iOS devices and Mac devices, for example, we will provision Wi-Fi certificates on the devices through our management tools to promote a better user experience.
Very cool, very cool. Fergus, you spoke about the My Microsoft IT application. I mean, how do you prioritize some of those new capabilities that you may want to add? I mean, with mobile devices, I mean, everybody's getting new functionality, new things all the time. They just seem to be constantly on the go. How do you make sure that you've got the right things and the right applications and the right services and functionality for our users?
Ah, okay. There are quite a few inputs to that. One of the main ones, since we're trying to accelerate or increase end-user productivity, one of the main ones is looking at what tickets or what requests are coming into the help desk. Because our model in My Microsoft IT has been to, if possible, eliminate the need for the end-user to call the help desk to get IT support. We try to recognize any issue that occurs on the end-user's machine and jump in and offer a fix for it before it gets out of hand and the user gets to the point where they have to call the help desk. So one of the major inputs in figuring out what we're going to do is looking at what's coming into the help desk in terms of tickets. We are largely driven by the ticket inventory at the help desk. Once a month, we go through what's been coming in, look at what users are calling about. But there's also a certain amount of tribal knowledge involved. Talking with my colleagues and with people in the product groups and with real users as much as possible. We have a very strong two-way feedback mechanism. One thing that we've been working on quite a bit recently is, I'll pick up Jim's point, is extending our platform coverage beyond Windows desktop. We're now going using the Universal Windows platform to cover all Windows devices, and extending beyond that even to Android, iOS, and Mac OS X, we're using Apache Cordova for that, so that we can enable scenarios. Like, for example, we automatically store all the details of the end user's machine. So that if they walk out into the parking lot, drop their Windows machine and it shatters on the ground, they can place a call to the help desk for that machine from their Android phone and pass in all the details of the Windows machine that's in pieces on the ground. We're extending our capabilities cross-platform, and we're driven by what end users are telling us they need in end user scenarios. And all of this is possible because the My Microsoft IT app has a footprint on the end user machine that we're able to use to remotely deliver cloud-based services to our end users.
To add on to Fergus's point, he makes a good observation around tribal knowledge and tickets that happen. So these are two extremes, really. One is assumption of the domain that you're trying to place your application in and solve the purpose. The other is a reactive mechanism. Hey, something's broken or something's not working as it is intended to be. One interesting trend that we are also seeing and now is the introduction of telemetry as the users use it, so that space between the tribal knowledge or the assumptions that we start off while we make an application to the time when it is being used, to the real-time monitoring in the sense how the users are really using it, what areas of the application is the most used ones, in what manner are they using it, are they trying to work around your intended workflow to accomplish their tasks, because what that helps you, that helps the development team back with a feedback loop which they can proactively monitor and not just wait for things to break or have that support incident. That's
speaking
one.
Speaking of that feedback loop,
exactly.
During the rollout of Office 365, we had prepared the help desk with knowledge base articles and decision trees and things like that in preparation for the onslaught of help desk tickets that we were expecting to get. And it never happened because we found out that people were using social media to help each other out. So we had to implement some social media data mining strategies to figure out this hole that was left in the help desk log that we didn't anticipate.
Yeah.
And it was quite heartening to see the early adopters and the people who were self-proclaimed experts in their various groups helping other people work through some of the issues that they encountered. And to this day, we mine those statistics from the social media. And this includes Yammer, it includes Twitter and Facebook and all these social media platforms to gain a measure of user sentiment. And we find that it's even more real time than our help desk logs.
Absolutely.
Because in the past, our help desk logs were posted in arrears, sometimes as long as 24 hours later. So now we can actually watch the pulse or keep our fingertips on the pulse of the service that we're interested in. It's very
even we at Microsoft did have to face this cultural change, so to speak, because traditionally you would have certain channels where you would listen to signals for the ones like, hey, what are the issues and where do we listen to, which typically used to be the help desk area. But like Jim mentioned, it's now the social signals. We need the ability now to look into social signals to determine where the issues are and how knowledge bases could be developed, because traditionally there was a more formalized, more sequential process. And with mobility, what it does is, because the endpoints are so dispersed around, you have to have that backend also, which is able to seek out signals and incorporate them into the feedback loop and use that data science to provide a better experience in the completion of user scenarios.
Tools like Fricus's, the one that Fricus is working on, is really crucial for us as we have a greater diversity of devices in our environment. In the mobile space, we are trying to be very proactive and unblock users to help them out and to move them forward when they do encounter issues. Having a tool that works across the mobile set of devices that we have, particularly here at Microsoft, enables us to provide a better level of service and lower the user frustration of using the devices within our environment.
For our enterprise customers, one classic example is the reuse of code. One area that Fergus touched on was Apache Cordova. With the acquisition of Xamarin, what it allows us is also to reuse the same code base across your iOS devices, Android. Essentially, you're able to target these platforms. Not only these platforms, but you could also target Android, different form factors of Android, which is write once, use anywhere, including the Windows Universal App. So these are really barriers. These really remove your barriers to target your audience space. That's a huge democratizing factor, like Isaac mentioned.
Yep. One I'd pick up from you was the telemetry that you talked about.
Yeah.
We've been using Application Insights within my Microsoft IT, and I think this is one of the kind of unsung capabilities that we have here at Microsoft. It's a part of the Azure stack, and it's available within Azure, and that's provided us with a tremendous listening capability across our client platform. So we can actually, and I'm hesitating here a little bit to make sure that I'm right on the privacy perspective, we can actually see the actions that our end users are performing. We can get real live telemetry on our users' experience in the application and on any problems that they're encountering. That's been tremendous. It's enabled us to instrument our application without a lot of the overhead that would normally be associated with doing something like that, because we put the instrumentation in, and the rest of it, the collection and the reporting and all of that, is all taken care of by the Azure Cloud platform. That's worked really well. I think it's relatively unsung in the Microsoft family, but it's a tremendous capability. It's one I'd highly recommend.
Very cool.
The same thing that happens on the Azure AD platform too. You touched upon privacy, even the security logins or whatnot with the advanced reporting capabilities available out of the Azure AD service. You're able to determine anomalous logins and things like that, which really gives the IT administrator or the person who's running an IT ecosystem peace of mind. I'm sure Eric can touch additional on that, something on that.
Cool. Well, great conversation and discussion around that area. We've got a question that actually brings up an interesting point here. So we've got a reasonably specific question around some of the features and the roadmap for Intune. So this is probably a good time for me to go into our canned response of we're part of Microsoft IT here. We're not the product group. It's not really our part of our function to announce features or to give information on roadmaps or those sorts of things. So we're not going to be able to give you ETAs for new features. You're not going to hear product announcements here, or at least we're going to try not to. But the question really goes to being particularly interested about granular control of non-Windows devices and what we can do to lock those down. So anybody like to field this from the point of view of, I guess, what we can do now in the, I guess, the Android and the iPhone space for locking down features, turning things on and off on that space? And I guess I'm looking to you, Isaac, from a management point of view.
So Microsoft IT uses Microsoft Intune to manage non-Windows devices, whether they be iOS devices, Mac devices, and Android devices. And the set of features that we're able to control are dependent on the type of device that we have and the capabilities of that device. I don't know the exact set of features that we do control for each particular device, but there are general things that we support across the devices for management, such as password protection and access control to IT services. But there's further details in the blogs on Windows Intune. So.
Okay, cool, thanks. I guess while we're on mobile devices and what we can do with them, in a lot of cases we're wanting to access corporate services and corporate information. So from a security point of view, Eric, what can be done with a mobile device to provide that strong authentication to corporate services that we need and demand?
So some of the things that we do are we control access to things specifically like our corporate Wi-Fi and VPN by the use of certificates. And so it requires enrollment in Intune or to be domain joined to be able to get one of these certificates,
right,
these tokens. And so what we're able to do, if you're domain joined, this is kind of the classic way that we've supported these devices, is starting with like the Windows desktop was domain joined. And of course, with group policy, you're able to control the security policy of that particular machine. Well, you move to the mobile world, you don't have those same knobs to turn, not as many as you have as you're on the Windows platform. But we do have the ability to apply policy to control things such as whether or not there's a screen lock or PIN policy on the particular device. Obviously, whether or not what the complexity or what kind of a length of PIN or thing like that's required. Whether or not we support healthy or unhealthy devices. If there's a device that comes on our network that has been unlocked or is otherwise been rooted, we can detect that. We also have the ability to specify whether or not the device is encrypted before it comes on our network. We want to be able to protect our data that's on these mobile devices, and obviously having an encryption policy is really important if that device gets lost or is stolen. And then we also want to be able to have our devices be remotely wiped. That also gives us an additional ability if a person is able to get access to the phone and maybe knows the PIN. If we can remotely wipe it, we would be able to prevent malicious use of that data. So these are all policies that we're able to enforce and currently are enforcing right now through Intune and get applied to these systems. And what then we can do to control access to corporate resources is like Wi-Fi and VPN, is once they meet the device policy, we're able to add a certificate. And a certificate is what grants access to those corporate services.
Very cool, very cool. So a question around conditional access, and can you describe how Microsoft leverages conditional access to control device access to various resources?
So we're in the process of rolling out conditional access across our environment. And anyway, conditional access gives us the ability to ensure both that we have device health, and then we also have proper authentication, and we use claims on that particular security token to ensure that when you're accessing, let's say, mail or SharePoint Online or other resources, that those claims are present to say, hey, I've got a healthy device, or I have used the correct strong authentication when I'm accessing this resource, and then we can grant that access conditionally based off of those conditions.
Very cool, very cool. A question, let's see now. I guess really still on devices here. Is it possible for us to proactively manage drivers that are installed on our end users' machines? So I know in the old days we had, I guess, the DLL hell, but that's probably dating me quite a bit. But this is probably a question for you, Fergus. Is it possible for us to proactively manage those drivers that are installed on the end users' machines?
Yes. This is a capability that we've recently added to My Microsoft IT. Since we have a footprint on the end user machine, we are proactively managing which version of at the moment, Wi-Fi driver is installed on the end user's workstation. And the way that that's working is that once a day, our each end user machine presents to our cloud service some details of the machine and which Wi-Fi driver is being used. Wi-Fi is absolutely critical for us, of course, in this mobile environment. I mean, if I look at the building that I'm in, we have almost no wired access. Almost everything is wireless. We've had a few little speed bumps along the way as we've adjusted to that, but in the spirit of being a Microsoft's first and best customer, we've done it and we've gone for it. We have almost no wired access. Now, that means a very, very heavy dependency on wireless infrastructure and on the part of which is the wireless driver. So we've used My Microsoft IT to detect which wireless driver is on the machine, present that to a cloud-based reference, and if they don't match, then the cloud-based reference returns a recommended driver and a remediation path to the end user. They could just click there and the driver will be remediated up to the preferred Wi-Fi driver on that machine. Okay. And that that reference, that cloud reference, is something that, well, at the moment I get to update it, and it's quite easy to do. It's just a reference list of what drivers do we want on which machines. All I have to do is update that, and the cloud infrastructure and My Microsoft IT client on our end user workstations takes care of the rest. Of course, we measure the compliance and our success, and we are way up in the very high 90%. With the driver versions that we want to have on the end user machine. And that's been a very, very successful program to give us a live management capability for drivers that we depend on very heavily on the end user machine.
Very cool. You mentioned Wi-Fi. In fact, we've mentioned Wi-Fi a couple of times. I mean, if we compare and contrast, I don't know how far back we have to go, but you know, when everybody had just a wired tap into the wall, and we had a machine, and then maybe somebody had Wi-Fi throughout the network somewhere. Now we've got almost every person has two, three, four.
Multiple.
Some people have five or six devices that are hitting our Wi-Fi network. How has that been on our infrastructure? Is that something that that we can talk to?
On our infrastructure in terms of the load that our backend services
yeah.
have to take to. Definitely, the amount of signals that we are receiving, it's no longer in gigabytes or terabytes. We are starting to reach petabyte limits because the amount of telemetry, the amount of heartbeat signals that the servers have to collect and analyze, that's when that big data explosion, as we really figuratively refer to, starts kicking in. And this is precisely, again, why collecting them into a into a public cloud provider makes sense, because the economies of scale start to kick in. If you were to own and host the cogs for all the servers that would be collecting these signals, Definitely, you are not going to have, or our customers are definitely not going to individually get the benefits from hardware vendors or otherwise, because apparently it turns out that Microsoft happens to be the second largest data center acquirer. We have highest data center footprint in the world, but the number of hardware servers that we have, if Microsoft were to put up all the servers on sale, we would beat Dell, apparently, in the number of servers that we've already acquired. So going back to that point, and what Microsoft does, not only within our IT ecosystem, but also for our external customers, is allows the cost benefits also to pass over, and while at the same time allowing for these signals to be captured and services to be up and running. The large volume and the velocity of data is actually imbibed very quickly with this.
Very cool, very cool. What happens if a device is stolen? Unfortunately, this happens from time to time. Can we run through that as a scenario?
Yeah, that's definitely a real scenario. I can think of two. A device is stolen, and you want it just to be totally wiped out so that access to anything that's on there is destroyed. Another scenario might be a little less severe. Heaven forbid, you leave Microsoft, but you still have your own device.
Does anyone actually leave Microsoft?
Sometimes they do.
Okay.
Sometimes they retire. But they want to keep their personal stuff, so what do you do with the corporate stuff?
Yeah.
And we have the tools in our mobility suite that enables us to selectively wipe just the corporate accounts and corporate data from that personal device or tablet. And if it's stolen and we want to wipe the whole thing, we can do that as well. That's the nuclear option. Boom, it's pretty much wiped. So we have two capabilities there, or two levels of wipe that is at an IT department's disposal to deal with that particular scenario.
Very cool, very cool. Mobility, obviously, you mentioned, we'll probably date this broadcast by talking about Pokemon Go again, but, the boom of applications, the boom of use for mobility is huge. Mm-hmm. What is the biggest trend that mobility has enabled for us here at Microsoft?
Sure. So traditionally, our corporate applications, right, would be only accessible within the corporate domain, so to speak, behind the firewall, right? If you had to access it outside of your corporate network, you'd have to VPN into your network and whatnot. You'd have to go through all these hassles. What mobility has truly pushed us is to, ensure that you are able to access your corporate information externally, but through security and privacy policies in place. So one of the biggest trends that we're starting to see is that you're getting your information where you want it, like we alluded early on. The second trend that we are seeing more and more emerge is because now we have reached a point wherein there is enough data being generated, and this data is now becoming actionable as well. Because they are getting collected centrally at a cloud service, you're able to put in more actionable data as well. One classic example is the usage of Dell within our ecosystem. We are able to understand and see how our co-workers or colleagues are using our documents or what is updated in a more intuitive manner, rather than having to rely on a notification or a mail always. So, key trends definitely is you're able to get your work done in more self-service means and fashion more than ever before. The explosion of data that is emerging, the tags and documents and whatnot, and to make meaningful, actionable information out of it, that is being accelerated. We are already trying to leverage machine learning applied on that data to get predictive insights so that we are able to be better prepared for any failure scenarios in one case, or other models that could predict the trends in which usage could proceed.
Very cool.
I would also like to add just the ability to be able to work across different devices. You could be working on documents on, let's say, your Windows devices and then your non-Windows devices pretty seamlessly. We have applications that allow this, that work that provide very good experiences on Windows devices and very good experiences on non-Windows devices. Mm-hmm. And this allows people to be mobile with their data and their productivity. Yeah.
And one other key trend that we see is traditionally the apps used to be like your Swiss Army knife. It was expected to do a lot of things. With the explosion in mobility, on the developer side of the equation, what has happened is the focus is on more what we call a snackable apps, which means you're trying to solve a point scenario with gestures, with rudimentary gestures, and getting that done without, so to speak, a very complex workflow. That's one trend that we see. What that also allows is you're not bound on the developer side or the engineering side to, or waiting on the engineering side to deliver a very full-blown application year in terms of the delivery cadence is not years or months, it's probably weeks, and the updates that could be pushed out more frequently.
Very cool, very cool. What about VPN solutions? So, we talk about the snackable apps and mm-hmm. talking about mm-hmm. connection to our back-end corporate services. Mm-hmm. What solutions do we have for VPN access to Microsoft internal resources for iOS and Android mobile devices? Is that something, Eric, from a VPN on those unmanaged devices? How do we protect that?
This isn't something I particularly work on, but it's what we are able to do is we're able to use both certificate-based authentication, but we also enhance certificate-based authentication with something that we call phone authentication.
Okay.
We can talk a little bit more about that. In some cases, especially with a VPN client that doesn't support strong authentication, what we're able to do is enhance the authentication using an out-of-band type of authentication, and it's called phone authentication. It's completely out-of-band. It could be in the form of either a voice call, or your mobile device will actually ring, and you answer your phone, and you enter a PIN on that particular phone, or it could come as an SMS text, but it's a two-way text. It's not like you're taking a PIN number or something that you got texted and putting it into a separate UI. You're actually responding back to that SMS text. So that way, if you can't modify the VPN client to be able to support strong authentication, you can just respond back to that text.
But
it's out of band, like I was saying,
right.
So you're not having to modify the client, but it's happening as you're authenticating with VPN with like maybe a username and password.
And you have to pre-register your phone
yeah.
as your second authentication
yeah, exactly.
platform.
And then the third way to do that is we have a phone authentication app. And that app, in a similar way, is out of band, you receive a notification in that app that, hey, someone's trying to log in to VPN, and you just respond to that app with entering your PIN, and then that would authorize the VPN to go forward.
Okay.
And so that's a flexible way to add multi-factor authentication when you can't modify the VPN client and you want to have something stronger than just username and password.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, cool. A question back probably to you, Arun, mm-hmm. around, you talked about the snackable apps
yeah.
and application development.
Mm-hmm.
How do the engineering teams at Microsoft get structured so that mm-hmm. we can take advantage of this? I mean, it sounds like,
absolutely,
there's a big
yeah.
difference from yeah. development of the past where you locked away 100 developers
mm-hmm.
For 12 months,
yeah.
18 months, and they,
yeah.
they gave you an application
yeah,
at the end, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
How does that change now?
So you hit the nail on its head. We also spoke about the cultural change that had to take place for us to be able to fully embrace this agility and use it in meaningful ways. One of the trends that we are seeing that we are also incorporating is the DevOps processes, which effectively means that it also goes in conjunction with the one engineering, which means there is no concept of a traditional test team who would be sitting testing months on together on the code base that the developer team just threw it the wall, so to speak. And then there is a third operational aspect, which who would be just responsible for managing and running the services. So with the DevOps process, what we are seeing is developers are being proactive about incorporating instrumentation, then require telemetry, or so to speak, the operational aspect, so that whenever an incident happens in any application that they've developed, they are able to troubleshoot issues way faster. So the key success metrics now shifts to the mean time to resolution and whatnot. And they are starting to see the light in more accelerated fashion. And then the other aspect about snackable apps, what it allows is, because you're iteratively releasing services, capabilities, probably over a weekly cadence, you are able to also roll back in event of failures without having to worry about a huge disruption in your activities or your customers' activities that is happening. So these trends are starting to show light in terms of long-term true customer satisfaction, because what we are seeing is our customer satisfaction numbers go up because they are getting what they need versus what was pushed onto them by some assumption of, hey, this is how a workflow would be. True, the hypothesis test and then develop cycle does not go out, but it's just that it's more accelerated and it's starting to show more meaningful light.
In your opinion, mm-hmm. Has the quality level mm-hmm. or the number of bugs mm-hmm. per app or
great
whatever
question,
at delivery,
yeah.
has the quality gone up because of this, or has the quality remained the same, or has it kind of dipped?
Okay. Great question. This is always up to debate, and this sort of comes out as the white elephant in the room in many cases. What really happens is, because in the enthusiasm to release capabilities faster, there are mechanisms to cut corners and whatnot, right? People, developers, engineers also tend to find ways to work around it. But having said that, it's only if you do not incorporate more automation, that is, you have test automation incorporated fast. So traditionally, if a bug were to happen, right, in so to speak, shrink wrap products or even server components that would be deployed with a huge deployment cycle, what would happen is the cycle to fix a bug would be huge, because you had to go through release management processes, very detailed release management processes. I'm not saying that there is no release management processes now, it's just that it is more accessible. Because of DevOps, what happens is, from the time that a bug is detected to its resolution, right, that is shortened drastically. So the impact of the quality loss, if any, is also drastically reduced. So the new metrics is not necessarily the quality is now not just measured in the terms of number of bugs. It is really in terms of usage and how effectively and for how much duration your customer was blocked because of not being able to either access or use that functionality. So it's like the levers that you use to balance out things on both sides.
So did it go up? Did it go up?
I know I still did not answer that question. That was deliberate, as I said, right?
Okay.
The quality metrics and the formulae that we use to arrive at it is also changing and evolving. Yeah.
Okay.
So there's no black and white answer to it as such. But
thanks
overall,
for that, Jim.
You're welcome.
Yeah, overall, we are definitely seeing higher customer satisfaction numbers.
Yeah.
Now, do we really tie that to the quality going up or down? That is subjective.
You know, in the end, customer sat is where it's at.
Absolutely.
So at the end of the day, the customer gets the functionality that
Absolutely.
They need faster and, and it improves iteratively.
Yep. Yep.
Cool. Fergus, anything to add from your point of view, from the My Microsoft IT app? Any insights around, the development cycles for there?
We have very rapid development cycle and release cycle in My Microsoft IT, and that is a big change from how things used to be. The burden of making a release has been reduced dramatically, and that's been a very, very good thing. But as Arun says, it means that it brings with it come responsibilities.
Yep.
Because the person who's in charge of making a release is responsible for that change.
Mm-hmm.
So it's then the responsibility of that person to go through all of the at least the mindset of thinking of the way that operations used to be in the past. Now, one of the big advantages of that we've seen, and I heard Arun touch on it a little bit, is that developers, when they are doing their work, are thinking about this from an operational perspective. I think the point you made was that they are putting telemetry in at the time that they are doing development.
Exactly.
And I'm seeing that too, knowing that they are going to want to see how it behaves once it's operational. There isn't any longer that that wall between development and operations of, you know, that something gets developed and then, you know, that's the end of it. I wash my hands until we come back and we make release two. Because of that responsibility connection, I suppose might be one way of saying it, between development and operations, we've arrived at a situation where we have very rapid deployment and rapid iteration, but with it has come the responsibility, and it's working quite well.
And the traditional friction that would exist between, so to speak, different engineering functions is rapidly decreasing, and that is really the things that we see on the ground. It's not just in pie in the sky kind of a thought. It's now we are seeing reality happen in those areas as well.
How long has it taken so far for that culture shift?
True. I mean, we always talk about starting small when we were really trying to get these changes into our teams. We didn't do a big bang approach, as in, you know, hey, we woke up. It was not like we woke up one fine morning and we said, okay, we are just going to do DevOps. It definitely takes training, reskilling in some cases, as Fergus also mentioned about developers really starting to think more holistically rather than just in their small, narrow boxed mentality. So as a process, because we started small and then we started applying those learnings back onto bigger engagements, we were able to learn from our smaller mistakes that we were able to do earlier. So over a period of time, it's definitely not a weeks or months effort, because culture change does take time, and different teams in Microsoft has adopted differently to it. Some teams were able to take to it like fish would to water immediately. Others, there has been a certain conscious training effort, reskilling, and that cycle we had to go through that cycle and take it into our stride.
Yep. Isaac, did I cut you off earlier?
I was going to add, it seems, listening to you, that there's been a greater focus on delivering user value.
Yes.
And to deliver user value rapidly.
Yep.
Can you speak to that?
Yeah, sure. So traditionally, as Fergus initially said, right, hey, we would have been thinking about what servers, what networking capabilities, hey, there would be, these functions would be housed in really different sections, right? Now, with your the ability to host your services on the cloud, which is really available on tap, what has happened is your the infrastructure related boilerplate work that you would be traditionally doing has gone off. You're really focusing on the business process and how do you really, and it's also getting into a stage wherein you're trying to configure business processes rather than just developing them. You are trying to reuse existing software assets where possible, be it your mobile controls, the controls that you would have on a user experience, or even on the services side. So what that has helped is the true engineering focus is now trying to shift on the business value, because they are aware that there is a different public cloud available which is taking care of your infrastructure purely via configuration and on demand. You're not waiting those long cycles. So that value addition is gaining ground at a higher rate than was traditionally.
And the design of applications has changed too, the whole process. You're looking at it from the end user standpoint rather than the functionality and the widget level.
Absolutely.
So, and you spoke briefly about reusing components.
Mm-hmm.
As we're making more and more mobile applications, we're contributing to a library of pre-configured APIs and pre-configured tools and things that can be reused by other teams.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not reinventing the wheel every bloody time we come up with another little morsel of an app.
Absolutely.
So it's really changed the way we develop. It's changed the speed at which we developed and the speed at which we can respond to things as well.
Very cool.
The cloud infrastructure essentially is giving you the, I would call it the standardized APIs using which, you know, your marketplaces could be used. For example, our customers could be making use of components out of Azure Marketplace. Within Microsoft IT, though we do not use the IT Marketplace, we do have an internal discovery mechanism through which we know these are the components that are used in these use cases for your customized or tailor-made scenario that you would want to arrive at. You're not starting from zero. You're really starting from a place wherein you have a mature component, tried and battle-tested, and you're reusing and just customizing for your specific need.
Excellent.
That's accelerated a lot.
Very cool. Well, look, great discussions and great information, but we're getting close to the end of our hour. You should actually see another poll question on your screen, so please take a moment to let us know if this has been valuable to you. As we wrap up, though, I do want to ask our SMEs one final question each. So each of you have worked with the mobility solutions for a while now. Can you give us just one key takeaway that you'd like our customers to leave with today? So we'll start with you, Jim.
Look at the cloud as a foundation that is absolutely necessary to enable all of the scenarios for your users to be productive. You have to have that to enable that mobility aspect of what we're talking about here.
Excellent. Fergus?
The thing I would say is be flexible. I know that's a very generic statement. We've got so many different things now that we are tying together to deliver IT service. They connect in so many different ways. This is one of the things that makes it interesting to be in IT today, I think. So be flexible and ready to do things in different ways. We've done that and it's worked really well.
Very cool. Thank you. Eric?
So I would say remember identity can be a key to security, and remembering the user identity and strong user authentication along with the device identity and the health of the device working together to grant access to resources.
Cool.
Right. I would sort of add to this is that in the mobility space, we're moving from an on-premise solution, a single device solution, to a multiple device solution. And in that space, cloud services, identity services, device management services, and security services need to accommodate this new environment.
One of the key takeaways that I would say is that with the mobility and the mobile first and the cloud first experiences, what we're seeing is a trend towards more agile development. We are able to reuse the data that comes out of these deployed services and mobile experiences, and making that data actionable. Now that is where we are seeing that the needle is really moving big time through machine learning and whatnot. And that is what is going to be the next wave, I believe, in our whole journey.
Very cool.
Actually, I've
Thanks.
Got one more. Can I have
sure.
one more?
By all means.
The one thing for me to remember in all of this, so you didn't give me a moment to think, which I needed. The one thing to remember in all of this is it's all about the user.
Yep.
The
yep.
reason that we're doing
Absolutely.
This is
yep.
end user experience.
Yep. Yep.
And that's the one thing. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to emphasize that.
Yes.
That's why we are here.
I think that's why we're all here, isn't it?
Yep. Yep.
Thanks, Fergus, and thank you. So we're now at the end of our broadcast. I want to thank all of our SMEs for taking time away from your day jobs, because you guys actually have real jobs to go back to now. I also want to thank our customers. Thank you for joining us. We hope you've enjoyed this broadcast. We've certainly enjoyed your questions and the dialogue on how we do mobile solutions here at Microsoft. We do have a survey question, so please let us know if this has been valuable to you. We do need that feedback to make sure that we make these better and better each time. And we also wanted to let you know that we have regular live webinars that are scheduled every month on a variety of topics. Please join us and bring your colleagues along. You'll find scheduling information for these, as well as recordings and other content at our website at microsoft.com/IT Showcase. So on behalf of all of the SMEs here, we want to thank you again for joining us and have a great day.
Thank you.